Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm. It is our great pleasure to once again bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly on the radio, where every week we do our best to bring you all the news, notes, and rumors, everything going on in the National Football League, both on and off the field.
Willis McGahee, Ahmad Bradshaw, RG3, and yes, Tim Tebow. A lot of news for early June. We've got it all for you.
It's just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Welcome all, and thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly on the radio. I am Hub Arkish. I am joined in studio by Senior Editor Eric Edholm. Associate Editor Arthur Arkish is out this week, but should rejoin us again next week as we bring you up to date on all the news, notes, and rumors from around the National Football League. So many teams in OTAs, actually wrapping up OTAs and mandatory mini-camps. Most teams do take the better part of the month of June off before they get ready to go to training camp in July. But Eric, a surprising amount of big news this weekend.
Yeah.
You got to start with the biggest. I don't know if it'll be the biggest news relative to what happens in the NFL this year on the field, but it certainly is one of the biggest stories of the offseason. The New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick and his trusted lieutenant Josh McDaniel, who traded up to draft Tim Tebow in the first round in Denver, have now signed Tim Tebow, allegedly to be a quarterback for the New England Patriots.
That's right. I think that last part is sort of the more intriguing thing. You know, there were some initial reports once the signing was, reported by various news outlets that he's going to be a tight end. He's going to be an H-back. He's going to be a running back. He's going to be a Swiss Army knife there in New England. You know how they do it with Troy Brown and guys like that. As I understand it, they're working him to be a quarterback. And as I've read over the details of the contract, I think it's a no-lose situation. I mean, if he's not good enough, there's no guaranteed money. They cut him. They have their way with him, and then they're done with him. I mean, why not take a chance on a guy who was a first-round pick, Heisman Trophy Award winner, national champion in college, heart of a champion, playoff winner in Denver? It makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, and the other thing about it, or a couple other things about it, going to New York, Rex Ryan, and to a degree even Mike Tannenbaum, went out of their way to make him the center of controversy.
Yep.
That ain't going to happen in New England. I mean, you know, you got Bill Belichick, you got Tom Brady, you got a few other people who can play. He's going to be another guy. And when people try and make a point about it, these veterans, these Hall of Famers, they're going to say the next question. So, you know, I don't think you're going to see the circus in New England that you saw in New York.
I thought Belichick shut it down pretty well during that first day. You know, he kind of gave the media a little smirk when they sort of showed up, and it was a big crowd of about 80 credentialed media. And then went on to say, you know, we've had bigger crowds here than this. So I kind of like the way Bill handled it. I know the media members, kind of roll their eyes at the way he answers questions. But he just wouldn't let it get out of control that first day. And I think that was a big first step in terms of not letting this Tebow thing get too big.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to Bill last week prior to this happening, mm-hmm. not about football, just some other stuff with everything going on with Pro Football Weekly. He is not the guy that we in the media portray him to be. Now, I'm not defending him. He's got his issues. There's
sure.
no question about that. And there's times when he could be better with the media. He is a Hall of Fame coach, and he understands his players better than I think most coaches in the NFL, which is part of what makes him a Hall of Fame coach. And it's another reason to me that this makes sense. I'm sure he sat the young man down, said, I don't care what your beliefs are off the field, but we're here for football. And so that's not going to be part of what's going on here. Here's the part I'm having a hard time buying, though, Eric. I can't believe, based on what everybody, I know Josh McDaniel's a big fan, but too many people have seen him fail at the position to think that you're suddenly going to completely reinvent him, and he is capable, because it's a team that only carries two quarterbacks. Now,
right.
maybe they'll carry three, but to think that he's capable of beating out Ryan Mallett, that you've got a team contending for a Super Bowl, that if Tom Brady should get hurt, remember it was just, 3 years ago, he went down for the year,
yep.
that you're going to live and die with Tim Tebow. So that's why, in spite of what we've heard so far, I believe, especially with questions about Rob Gronkowski's
yeah.
health, and, you know, could he be a tight end? Could he be a safety? Even though they brought in Adrian Wilson, a tremendous area of need for this team. Maybe what they're saying now is he's going to be a quarterback, but they're working him up to the idea, okay, if you'd like to have value to this team, like so many other players, take a Julian Edelman, take even a Wes Welker. I mean, you may have to do some other things.
Yeah, and this is a team that has kept Matthew Slater on the roster strictly being a special teams player. You know, they drafted the kid out of Ohio State who had played three defensive snaps in all of college. So they pay attention to special teams, and they don't mind unitaskers, guys who are great at one thing. And if they find out that he's not a quarterback and that he can help this team out, I mean, I keep thinking back to the red zone performance against the Ravens. One of the best red zone teams in the regular season. Patriots died in the red zone against the Ravens. Having a weapon like Tebow, especially if Gronk's banged up, couldn't hurt. But for now, I think he's a quarterback. It doesn't hurt that you've got McDaniels, you've got Brady, you've got some of the best guys in the business, Belichick, Brian Daboll, to work and shadow, and he's only 25, too.
Well, and here's the other key to what you just described about having this weapon in the red zone.
Yep.
Yes, a weapon, possibly as a tight end, possibly as a running back. I don't think when Tom Brady's your quarterback that you want him coming off the field for Tim Tebow to be a Wildcat quarterback. So, because there's those out there saying, oh, this is about a Wildcat thing. You know, Belichick's going to resurrect it. I think the rest of the league has figured out the Wildcat for the most part.
Right.
You're not going to take Tom Brady off the field to put Tim Tebow a quarterback. So I believe they're giving him a chance to develop into a quarterback. I believe Josh McDaniels is convinced that he can make him one. But I also believe there's a plan B. And I think that if it becomes obvious that at least right now he can't beat out Ryan Mallett, they may say, why don't you try a few other things to stick around? We'll keep working with you at quarterback too.
Right. And, you know, Mallett's got a year left on his deal, or sorry, 2 years left on his deal. He could be trade bait next year. You know, it's just, it's, he needs someone to push him as well. So I think it works on a lot of different levels.
It'll be fun. We know that. You know, we need a little more entertainment. We've got it now. Tim Tebow, a member of the New England Patriots, can't wait to see what Belichick and company do with him. Can't wait to bring you more news, notes, and rumors right after this quick commercial break. Welcome back, everybody. Pro Football Weekly rolls on. We're catching up on all the goings-on, both on and off the field around the National Football League, as I mentioned at the top of the show. All 32 teams pretty much wrapping up their off-season activities, organized team activities, some with still veteran mandatory minicamps. The Chicago Bears had one this past week. We'll talk about them in just a moment. But big news late in the week came out of Denver, where the Denver Broncos have cut the cord with Willis McGahee. Now, Eric, we know that McGahee's been injury-prone, that he really wasn't in control of the running game last year because of the knee injury, and, of course, he's had so much trouble with those knees through the years. He is in his early 30s, and yet I think most people felt he was at least going to get a chance to go to training camp and try and still compete for a job. He is now no longer a Denver Bronco.
Yeah, I think part of it had to do with the fact that they were so thrilled what they saw with Monty Ball, and, you know, now how quickly he seems to have picked things up and, you know, gotten in Peyton Manning's ear and listened to what Manning said and sort of, you know, followed him around like a little puppy. And the guy just scored a ton of touchdowns in college. So you're not worried about the workload. You're not worried about the short yardage stuff. You know, and Knowshon Moreno at least showed signs of life towards the end of the year. Ronnie Hillman was drafted to be a back in the system. So right there, you got three guys plus Lance Ball, another sort of useful guy. John Fox seems to like him. You know, I think they were deep enough where they felt like, you know, Willis, we'd love to have you. We'd love to have you healthy, but it's just best we move on now.
Yeah, I think the key here is if Monty Ball is the player he was his sophomore year at the University of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. then you may have a future star in the NFL. And he's going to be a lot cheaper than Willis McGahee. I mean, you had to sign him, and so you look at the cap hit you take this year. You know, McGahee, even if he was at the veteran minimum, which he's not, there probably wasn't a spot for him on this club. Now, do you see anybody else giving him a shot, or is he a guy who's going to be hanging around until teams have some injuries in training camp or maybe early in the season?
Well, I think if you look at the other you know, free agent backs out there, guys like Michael Turner, Beanie Wells, Cedric Benson, Brandon Jacobs, you know, there's a few of them out there. So I think it's going to be hard for a lot of these guys to find jobs. You know, I know we're going to talk about Ahmad Bradshaw down the road a little bit here, but it's hard enough for some of these guys not only to find jobs, but you've got to be pretty much a starter because none of these guys really are a factor on special teams. You know, Benson, you know, looked like he could have come back to Green Bay, but that was before they drafted two backs. So it just, there's not that many jobs out there for these guys.
All right, Eric, I want to talk about the Washington Redskins. And no team was a bigger surprise in the NFL last year than the Redskins were, winning the East and following their rookie quarterback, RG3, Robert Griffin III, into the playoffs and then dropping out of the playoffs as soon as he tore up his knee. And no team has been more hamstrung this offseason. Now, the good news is they haven't lost anybody, no key veterans. But because of the $18 million cap hit they took this year, and they'll take another one next year as part of the penalty for allegedly not acting in the best interest of the CBA back in 2010, they couldn't really do anything. They've added a couple probably backups, Jeremy Trueblood at tackle, you know, Darrell Tapp at outside linebacker, maybe he'll get some playing time. But the story has been RG3. And apparently, according to his surgeon, Dr. Andrews, he's making a remarkable recovery. You know, everybody's trying to look for the next AP, Adrian Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Andrews is warning, don't go there. Everybody's different. But there is hope that he could be ready for opening day. Now, he's talking about being ready for the first day of training camp. Mike Shanahan said this week that's not going to happen. He said, we were told by the doctor 7 months is the best possible case. That would be August 9th as far as the surgery, and August 9th is 2 weeks into camp. So don't look for RG3 to be all that active early in the Redskins training camp.
And I think that's fine. I mean, you know, give Kirk Cousins, you know, most of the offseason reps. He's had a chance to sort of prove himself as the, you know, the would-be starter if need be. And, you know, you don't have to rush RG3 back. And I think it's the best case scenario. You push the kid, you know, you give him all the enthusiasm and support he needs and, you know, the medical treatment and stuff. And I think he'll be back. He's an exciting kid. He's obviously very confident in his ability. He's a freakish athlete. The fact that he's been able to recover to this point, sprinting, they say, down the field, even making cuts, that's the biggest thing with the ACL is the pivoting and the cutting and shifting. It sounds like he is well ahead of any schedule anybody could have imagined. So far, best case scenario, I think.
Yeah, my only concern about him as a rookie, how successful he would be early, there was no doubt he was going to be a great player, was it coming out of somewhat of a gimmick offense,
yep.
You know, and we didn't know that Mike Shanahan would do as good a job as he did adjusting the offense to his ability, but would the passing game be there? Now, it was in spurts. There are still questions, but he was very efficient, but when a quarterback is rushing for 790 yards, you know that he's not doing enough of the passing game. That's one of the things they want him to do, is stay in the pocket more. We'll see how that develops, and, you know, Eric, I mean, here it is. There's no changes in this team. I mean, the improvement in this team has to continue to come as a result of what RG3 does with that offense.
And a huge part of what you just said, no changes, also has to do with how Kyle Shanahan's going to call it. The read option's still going to be there. They're going to still use that, and they felt like that was such an important weapon in terms of drawing the safety up, keeping those defensive linemen from rushing full bore because they want to protect. They want to, you know, contain and keep him in the pocket as best they can. So they feel like it's worth risk, you know, the risk of getting this kid hurt again, because that's the where he's most dangerous.
Well, and in the on the list of no changes, I don't know how you can have a list of no changes, but
the no list.
Daniel Snyder decided that offense was going to be the best defense, and right after the season ended, said, "By the way, we will never change the name Redskins." In response to some activists who felt it was insulting the Native Americans, the commissioner Roger Goodell has now authored a letter coming out in support of his position, saying it's a complimentary term; it's not meant as a negative. And AP did a poll; 80% of football fans agree there's nothing wrong with the name Redskins. I personally, to me, it's just, let's be politically correct about everything. No, we don't have to be politically correct about everything. This
right.
is not meant as an insult to anybody, yeah. and people need to understand where it came from and the spirit it was meant.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, then the Cleveland Indians and, you know, the Atlanta Braves and every other team that has a name like that should probably be up for changing. I mean, there's so many of them, and I think it's meant as a sign of respect, and this goes back to Jack Kent Cook. I mean, they've had for years, they've had this name, it's been a debate. And every 6-7 years, it seems to get drummed up again. I don't remember a lot of this talk when the Redskins were in last place. Is that coincidental, or is that just me?
I love the fact that Steve Ruchin, who does an outstanding uh-huh. job for SI, just called the Blackhawk sweater the best logo in all of sports.
Yes.
Now, there is a difference, though. I mean, Blackhawk, Indian, Brave, they're not quite – Redskin is a little different. Mm. I understand why it gets singled out. But come on, folks, leave it alone. Nobody's trying to offend anybody. We're going to take another quick commercial break here. Lots more to talk about, though, guys. News in Philadelphia, New Orleans as well. We've got it for you just ahead. We're here to talk football, and that's what we're going to do. And as I mentioned going to the last break, the Philadelphia Eagles obviously have been in the news pretty much the whole off season. They've got a complete change in the front office. Well, Howie Roseman sticks around, but has control now and changes everything around him. Of course, Chip Kelly, the new head coach, the big story. And nobody has made – well, maybe the Indianapolis Colts. The Indianapolis Colts and Philadelphia Eagles, the most active teams in veteran free agency, if not necessarily the biggest name, certainly the greatest roster turnover. And now comes the news that one of the old stalwarts, a Pro Bowl and All-Pro left tackle, Jason Peters, when he can stay healthy, which has not been often the last couple of years, was arrested late this week for drag racing and resisting arrest by flight, which I assume means driving his car away fast.
Yeah.
And there are going to be repercussions. It was down, I don't know if it's his home, but he was in Louisiana when it happened. This will be an interesting one, because when there are violations of the banned substance program, DUIs, that type of thing, recreational drugs, it's pretty clear. This is a little different. They're probably going to argue victimless crime, nobody got hurt. Mm. And, of course, we don't have details yet, but it can't make the new coach very happy.
No, I don't think so at all. You're talking about a player who missed all last season with a torn Achilles. You know, this is a new regime. They're counting on him. He looked good, and reportedly in minicamp, there wasn't one absence that everybody was kind of concerned about. But he was supposed to be their left tackle. And now, you know, you face the possibility if he's – A, not healthy, B, going to face some sort of suspension that, you know, maybe Lane Johnson, the rookie, is out there game one. So, you know, it's just another thing that, you know, the Chip Kelly, he's so unorthodox and he seems to, you know, swim upstream in so many different ways. Does he even consider cutting a player like this? I don't think so. That seems like an extreme step, but you never know. You can't put it past the guy that we don't have a real clear record on as far as what he's going to do in these situations.
Yeah, the only issue you'd wonder about is you've got a few new coaches. Kelly is one. Mark Trestman, Chicago, is another one, where forgetting what their scheme is, whether it's West Coast or Pistol or whatever, what they're really talking about is pushing the pace of the game. And in order to do that, they're looking for a different kind of offensive lineman. And they've got athletic tackles that they're making guards. Now, Jason Peters, as I said, an all-pro left tackle, I would think he would fit almost any scheme,
yep.
But you just wonder if he's going to be quick and athletic enough to do what Kelly wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt like he had good quickness, but he's also 340 pounds coming off, you know, I mean, he's had injuries in the past, especially this Achilles thing that really concerns you. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, we're also talking about a guy who's, I think, 31, I'm going to be 32 years old at the end of the season. So, you know, age for these guys can sit in rather quickly. We've seen tackles go well into the 30s, but the injury-prone ones are not the ones that usually make it that long.
One other, I thought, interesting story out of Philadelphia, and this wasn't clear to me whether Pro Football Talk reported it or they reported that somebody else reported it, but allegedly the Philadelphia Eagles offered their head coaching job to Texas A&M head coach Kevin Sumlin after Chip Kelly turned him down the first time. Now, apparently Sumlin turned him down, too, because yep. The job was there for Kelly. But you have to wonder, you know, where were they at in this whole thing? According to the report, they did try Kelly first, but it doesn't sound like they were that heartbroken. They were ready to move on. I'm sure they were pleased when Kelly decided to come back.
That's exactly how I understand it, talking to people around the situation. You know, Kelly was their guy. They went after him hard. I don't think he had a change of heart, but I think he had a moment there where he wasn't sure, and he felt some loyalty to Oregon. At least that's the story we're getting. I'm sure there are other factors as well. But he left him kind of high and dry. You know, I was calling it the city of brotherly leverage. I think he was kind of, yeah, using them against for something else. But that ended up not being the case. And in that little, I think it was about a 2-week period, maybe a week and a half, you know, they moved on. They went after another target. And you have to at least credit the Eagles for having a plan B and a plan C when it didn't necessarily look like they did at the time.
Outside linebacker Victor Butler had some very effective seasons with the Dallas Cowboys. Never really a full-time starter, but a role player, did some good things for them, both in their base defense packages and on special teams, so much so the New Orleans Saints give him a 2-year, $3 million free agency contract, not just because they want a specialist, but because in their switch from the 4-3 to now Rob Ryan's 3-4, they needed outside linebackers. Unfortunately, Victor Butler has apparently torn his ACL, and this is, I mean, it's not that he's been a great player, but this is a big hit to the Saints because they need new position players, and he was brought in to be one of those guys.
Yeah, this is not going to make or break their season, but, you know, Rob Ryan obviously wanted to bring some of his guys on. There were times when Butler really flashed, especially at the end of game as a pass rusher, but, you know, never a full-time player in Dallas. I always thought that Martez Wilson, the kid they drafted a couple years ago, was a super talent. He just needed the right scheme. This might be it. He could take that spot.
Now, according to the Saints, they are hopeful that Butler might not miss the whole season. They're looking for a Ray Lewis-type return. If this is a complete tear of the ACL, it hasn't been operated on yet, he's not going to be back. We're going to be back. We're going to take a quick commercial break and then more news and notes for you in just a moment. We are. I'm Hub Arkus. He's Eric Edholm, and we continue to go around the NFL with all the news and notes from the second full week in June of 2013. Again, teams still working out by next week and the next week. Everybody's going to go home for about 3 or 4 weeks, but a lot of activity this week. And, Eric, we finished the last segment talking a little bit about the New Orleans Saints. Cedric Ellis was a Pro Bowler on that 2009 New Orleans Saints Super Bowl championship team. Really has not been the same player since, has battled some injuries, so much so that he was allowed to leave via free agency this year, not because he can't play, but because he doesn't fit in a 3-4, which is the switch that they're making. He signed this week with the Chicago Bears. Very interesting, because while the Chicago Bears hung a franchise tag on Henry Melton, Henry Melton is not a pure three technique, four down player. He's a very good pass rusher. He's not very good against the run. They've got second round pick from 2 years ago, Stephen Paya, playing their anchor tackle. Behind that, they had very little. So this could be a significant signing for the Chicago Bears.
You know, there's always one or two signings, I feel like, in June or even in July before we even get to training camp that fall under the radar a little bit. And, you know, we are talking about a former top 10 pick, so I think people know who he is. But this might be one of them, and I think you're absolutely right. if he's able to give, I don't know, 20, 25, maybe even 30 snaps a game as that third tackle, I think it's huge. You know, I don't know what Nate Collin can do. Corvey Irvin was a third round pick for the Panthers. You know, they had a couple other guys who have been around the league a little bit, but none of them stand out, you know, credentials wise the way Ellis does. And I think he's going to be an interesting fit in this. And you know, maybe Tucker and company have something, you know, in mind for him.
Eric, one of the things that we talk about constantly at Pro Football Weekly, in part because of our leadership role as independent draft analysts, is that you never try and analyze a team's draft for at least two seasons, mm-hmm. maybe three, but at least two. Now, in Chicago, Phil Emery has just completed his second draft. Both have been loaded with, I'm going to call them, interesting picks, picks that surprised people. Remember in his first draft, Shea McClellan at 19 in the first round, a little bit higher than most teams had him, but the teams that had him in the bottom of the first round were an outside rushbacker in a 3-4. He makes him a hand-on-the-ground defensive end. Now, this year he comes back and reaches for Kyle Long in the first round. So, again, we're going to wait till the end of the season, but some real concern as you look at the first draft, the 2012 draft, because of the activities of this past week when they were finally forced to cut the cord with Evan Rodriguez, their tight end H-back. They had drafted him in the fourth round of 2012. The character questions were all over the place. You read Pro Football Weekly's draft preview book, everything was known. He lived up to those concerns. They just couldn't justify continuing to bring him back. So you look at that draft now, you've got Shea McClellan in the first round, still a very big question mark. Alshon Jeffrey, some really nice things and some questionable things as a rookie. And that's about it. Harden, their third pick, never played. He didn't play his last year in college. He didn't play his first year with the Bears. I'm told he's a little tight-hipped to maybe be a safety in the NFL. Rodriguez was the fourth pick. In the fifth round, Isaiah Frey's on the practice squad or finished the year last year, and everybody else is gone. Now, you know, they did get one undrafted free agent in James Brown, who's looking like a possible player at offensive guard and tackle, but they come back this year. They don't seem to be as concerned taking chances on a lot of, quote, character questions. And you have to wonder, knowing what's happened with other teams when they do a lot of that, if this is going to work out for general manager Phil Emery.
Yeah, and I think what, you know, the interesting thing about Emery in 2012, his first draft there, it seemed like with McClellan, safe, sort of a safe pick, you know, if you will. Then they take the risk with Brandon Harden in the third round, was considered a safe. So he kind of pinged back and forth. And then Rodriguez was a huge risk. Talent-wise, he might have been a second or third rounder, but he dropped to the fourth because people couldn't depend on him character-wise. So it was sort of an odd approach. It almost felt like he was kind of hedging his bets a little bit. And I don't think that's a good way to draft. Like you said, I think it's still probably too early. You know, maybe Shea McClellan ends up being Grant Wistrom or somebody like that. But right now, I think there are enough questions with the draft approach. You know, and for me too, I know it was the previous regime who took him, but trading Gabe Kareemi for such a low pick seemed like a panic move to me. So I'm a little off on this whole thing.
You know, I saw Gabe about 3-4 weeks ago, and he still looked skinny to me. He was a big
thin
mauling.
Ankle,
he was a big mauling right tackle when they drafted him. He had so much trouble with that knee that he had shrunk basically, and they were calling him a guard. Now, I've also spent some time with Kyle Long right after the draft, just for the TV thing we did together, and he looks to me to be a prototypical left tackle in the NFL, and yet they're making him a guard. This is what we were talking about earlier in the show, like the Eagles, Mark Trestman's offense, another team that wants a different type of athleticism in their offensive line. Let's be clear, Bears fans, not criticizing, not judging. We're talking philosophically. If you look back a few years from now, one thing, you know, there's this famous expression in the NFL, you can't have a locker room full of choir boys. You can't have a locker room full of character issues either. You got to find a perfect balance. And so it's going to be interesting to see if Phil Emery is striking that balance. He certainly succeeded with Brandon Marshall, which a lot of people, including yours truly, really worried about. Not because he wasn't a great football player, but would he stay out of trouble? He's actually become somewhat of a team leader. So jury's out. Be very interesting to see after this first season. One other thing very quickly, Eric, we heard reports out of Green Bay this week. Mike McCarthy is actually speaking about the desire for the Green Bay Packers to become more of a ground-based offense. Now, he's still going to do what he does with Aaron Rodgers, but obviously he's feeling pretty good about the drafting of Lacy and Franklin.
Yeah, and I really like Franklin. I think he's, you know, when you're in an up-tempo offense, you want a three-down back there, and I don't think Lacy's really that guy. We probably won't see him until the preseason games start, really step out. But for me, Franklin, you've got Harris still, Lacy. You know, I know that Starks and Green have been running first team in minicamp, but watch out, the rookies are here.
All right, guys, we've got to take a commercial break here, but when we come back, the Jacksonville Jaguars have been busy. Their new GM, David Caldwell, had some interesting comments this week. We'll get them for you in a moment. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial. I'm Hub Arkush, along with Eric Edholm. Arthur Arkush usually joins us. He is out this week, but we'll be back next week. We are currently talking about news and notes from around the National Football League. And down in Jacksonville, David Caldwell, a little bit more of a under-the-radar type pick as a GM, but tremendous bloodlines in terms of the people that he developed under Thomas Dimitroff in Atlanta and Bill Polian in Indianapolis, some pretty good tutors there. And they've been quiet down there, Eric. They know that they have to build through the draft. They're trying to find out what young talent they have and to supplement that. They know they're not going to get it done overnight. And then this week, Mike Kafka gets cut loose in New England as a result of the Tim Tebow signing. Of course, he was in Philadelphia as well, former Northwestern quarterback. And the Jaguars not only sign him, but the GM, David Caldwell, says Kafka has as good a chance of winning the starting job as Blaine Gabbert or Chad Henne.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wanted Tim Tebow to be the guy there. And it's ironic, I guess, that the Patriots release Kafka to sign Tebow, and then Kafka ends up there. You know, it gives them three guys with starting experience. Kafka had to sub in for Michael Vick and, you know, had a few moments. He's an athletic kid. He's a smart kid. He's a gamer. I mean, we saw him at Northwestern in a couple of great battles there in college. So it's pretty good for him. It's probably the best situation. But it also tells you how little confidence there is this year, beyond this year, in Gabbert, Henne, whatever. It's a new regime. They're starting over yet again. They have no real identity on offense. You've got question marks at receiver. You've got question marks on the offensive line. Maurice Jones-Drew has been in the news, not for good reasons. He's sort of at the end of his run, perhaps. I mean, there's so many things to be concerned about. They play a tough schedule. One of the, winning percentage over 50% next year, the teams they play. So, I don't know. As much as I want to be excited for Mike Kafka, I'm really nervous about the way things are going to go for this team this year.
Yeah, we'll get back to MJD in just a second, but full disclosure here, folks. Ed Holm is a Missouri alum, of course, a Blaine Gabbert fan. I'm a Michigan alum, a Chad Henne fan. But I got to say, Eric, I really thought coming out of Missouri that Blaine Gabbert could be something special, and I'm still not convinced he can't. I think what they found out with him, we talk about these college quarterbacks making the jump to NFL offenses, guys who've played too much of a read option or a pistol read. His was more of I don't want to call it a run and shoot, but it was kind of a funky passing game.
Yeah.
He was rarely under center, and we were told not as great a concern because he had been working out with a quarterback coach all through college at Missouri, even, though he wasn't running a pro-style scheme there, to get him ready. And he's really struggled with confidence more than anything else. I still think the big-time arm is there. I think the football instincts are there. And I would be surprised if he doesn't emerge as the guy with one more chance. You used a top-10 pick on him. You got to see what you got.
Yeah, I've spent a little time around Blaine. I'm not going to pretend to know him, but I've talked to him. He's a very nice kid. He was brought up in a great family. His dad, Chuck, is one of the nicest fathers of an NFL player you might meet in the league. So there's a lot to like about the way he was raised. Some people in the NFL thought he was maybe coddled a little bit. Coddled by his high school coaches, coddled by the Missouri coaches a little bit, protected a little bit, given sort of simplified one-read type schemes in college. I didn't necessarily think those things were completely true, but there's something there to it. And I think when he was thrown into the fire earlier than they wanted, remember Luke McCown was a disaster the first couple of weeks 2 years ago. They throw Gabbert in there without much of an offseason coming off the lockout, and predictably he wasn't very good. And when the other young quarterbacks like Cam Newton and even the rookies last year like Luck and RG3, when those guys flourished with better surrounding cast, everybody said, those guys can do it. Why can't Blaine? So he's been thrown into a little bit of a tough situation. That said, the confidence, like you said, that's a big thing. He's got to show leadership, and he's got to show that he belongs as a leader and an NFL quarterback.
Well, Eric, the definition of going for it all this year has been the Miami Dolphins. In free agency, they signed Danelle Ellerby, Brandon Gibson, Brent Grimes, Dustin Keller, Lance Lewis to play offensive guard, and, of course, the big deals to Mike Wallace at wide receiver and Philip Wheeler at linebacker. They also made big changes, though, letting veterans like Jake Long and Reggie Bush and Carlos Dansby leave. Now, Jeff Irone, the embattled GM, picks up Evan Rodriguez, the troubled tight end that the Bears cut loose. And what I find ironic about this is the first of Rodriguez's two arrests this year were in South Beach when he was down there.
Yeah.
He was down there working out. And by the way, the charges were dropped, but he clearly was under the influence. Mm. He wasn't driving, fortunately. And so it just is one more sign to me that Ireland has pushed all the chips to the middle of the table and said, we're gonna get over the hump this year.
Yeah, you can look at it as two ways. You can say, this is a football move. They're taking a former, fourth round pick, a guy who was talented in college. They have question marks at tight end with Dustin Keller, been banged up, hasn't been able to practice. You've got Michael Agnew, speaking of Missouri, a guy who was almost cut last year running with the first team. So you can understand from a football and a roster perspective why they might be interested in Rodriguez. But you're right. this isn't somebody that you pick up and necessarily claim and expect to be on the straight and narrow in a city of some temptation, I might say. So that's one big concern.
Well, and speaking of all in, their 30-something million-dollar wide receiver Mike Wallace's dad apparently was interviewed this week and said, hey, it wasn't about the money. The Vikings offered him $76 million. I got to take that one with a grain of salt.
Yeah, $76 million to go play. I guess he says, you know, Ryan Tannehill's better than Christian Ponder. That's probably what he's saying. At least that's the message he wants to convey. Mike's been doing a little talking this offseason, too.
Yeah, he talked a lot in Pittsburgh, and you got to expect him to talk in Miami. He's getting paid more to talk, so hopefully he will walk the walk. We've got one more commercial break before we get you more way we hear it. Big signing in Indianapolis. Lots of them in the offseason. This one may be the most interesting of all. We've got it coming up next. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, everybody. And I mentioned just before the commercial break I think it's a big story out of Indianapolis, because this is a team that earlier I called the Washington Redskins the biggest surprise in the NFL last year. I guess you'd have to make them number two. I think it's certainly the Indianapolis Colts going from 2-14 to 11-5 behind their rookie quarterback probably were a little bit bigger of a surprise. And rather than say, hey, look at all the great young talent I brought in, how good we were, NFL Executive of the Year Ryan Grigson really jumped into free agency with both feet. They've added veteran offensive right tackle Gosder Chehalis, nose tackle Abreu Franklin, wide receiver Darius Heyward-Bey. At safety, they bring in LaRon Landry and Donald Thomas to play guard. Eric Walden, outside linebacker of the Packers, mercurial to say the least, got $16 million. And they're going to bring back almost everybody. They had to let cornerback Jerod Powers move on, which is disappointing because they really liked him a lot, just injured all the time. And, of course, Dwight Freeney is gone. But now, late this week, they sign Ahmad Bradshaw. I was waiting to see where Bradshaw was going to land, Eric. If those feet are healthy, this is a Pro Bowl or close to a Pro Bowl running back. And again, you mentioned with Cedric Ellis earlier in the show, when you get this kind of potential impact at this point in free agency, you know, it's a boom or bust thing, but I don't think there's a tremendous risk for him.
Yeah, I don't either. I really like it. I think he's one thing that a lot of people don't realize about him, I think, is that he's outstanding in pass protection. I mean, rarely, if ever, gives up sacks or gets beaten on pass rush moves. Very tough guy. I mean, runs like a big back, even though he's not the largest guy out there. So you love his competitive nature. You love his strength running in the hole for somebody his size. Remember, Vic Bauer last year was something of a revelation. Those two could be a great pair. And boy, this, you know, fires a shot across the bow, Donald Brown. I mean, former number one pick for the team, hasn't lived up to expectations, had some great flashes, but with guys like Kerwin Williams, another kid they drafted, DeLon Carter, I think they may have their foursome, and it may not include Donald Brown.
Yeah, I mean, as much as they did like Vic Ballard last year, Ahmad Bradshaw, a very different kind of football player. This is a guy with Super Bowl rings. This is a veteran presence. And this is a guy, but, you know, I mentioned all the injury problems to the feet, but he played hurt most of the time. I mean, he's a warrior. I mean, he's going to show up if he can, and if he gets healthy, then he's a difference maker in this scheme.
Yeah, I really like him. I think he's going to be a great change of pace. I mentioned the third down capabilities on him, and I didn't love every move that Ryan Grigson made, and who am I to question him? I mean, he was brilliant last year constructing that roster, plucking from unexpected places, trading for Vontae Davis, et cetera. You know, the draft could help him again this year. I really think, you know, they got some interesting players, but this is one of the best free agents pickups I think they've made this offseason.
Well, and the other thing is, don't forget, they drafted two tight ends, and Dwayne Allen actually gave him more than Kobe Fleener. But a lot of people believe Fleener is the potential Pro Bowler. And if he takes a big step forward, so you add him as a weapon in the passing game, or at least get more out of him as a weapon in the passing game, you've got more out of the running game now. This could be really interesting. And here's the other thing about the Colts, Eric, that I just can't wrap my arms around. How much of this was about Bruce Arians being an outstanding interim head coach? How much of it was emotion? What do you get now with, thank God, Chuck Pagano back full-time and him running this football team?
Right, and then remember, you've got a new offensive coordinator with Pep Hamilton. Somebody's obviously worked with Andrew Luck before, but, you know, there are some scheme changes. And, I mean, Andrew's going to have to go back more to the West Coast scheme. You're right. You can't look past the emotional factor of this team. There's no question they rode a high, you know, gave, you know, everything they could down the stretch, not only get in the postseason, but also give the Ravens a little run in the first half of that playoff loss. But I think they take a small step back record-wise. I do. I think they're more of an 8-8, 9-17. That's just my gut feeling.
Pep Hamilton is a really good man. But don't forget, before he got to Stanford, he had a stint as the quarterback coach with the Chicago Bears. Yep. I believe Ron Turner was the offensive coordinator. It wasn't Mike Martz. And he was maybe thrown under the bus, but he was presented as part of the problem early on with Jay Cutler in Chicago. Now, he had a couple good years in Stanford. He may know Andrew Luck. Is he ready to now run an NFL offense? And again, I love the Chuck Pagano story. I love the ending more than anything, that he appears to be in remission and doing fine.
Yep.
But now we find out what kind of a head coach he is, and so it's going to have some impact on this football team. It'll be very interesting to watch. One other story very quickly. Cortland Finnegan, one of the more prickly characters in the NFL, we shall say, heard that an ex-teammate, Craig Dahl, the safety last year with the Rams, now with the 49ers, said that there were schemes in the Rams film that they discovered that are going to help the 49ers. And apparently Cortland didn't like that so much, and he tweeted, and it's rarely that we can make direct quotes from players, but this is in his words, not mine. Craig Dahl, I'm quoting Cortland Finnegan, is lame and weak for that. Glad he is with another squad. We know how he plays. Thanks for the tips. We know who to go at.
Yeah, I guess he's got his target there, right? I mean, I don't even know if Craig Dahl's going to make this team yet or not, but yeah, obviously this rivalry, and everybody kind of pegs it as Seahawks versus 49ers. Don't forget about these Rams, and they're a feisty little bunch. I like watching them. This is going to be a fun year for that.
Rams were 4-1-1 in the NFC West last year, but my big question is, does Craig Dahl even make the 49ers ball club? So we shall see. Guys, we've got to take a commercial break, but we do still have the Publisher's Pen coming up, so please stay right where you're at. We're back in a minute.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Eric, there was a story that broke late in the 2012 season, or maybe even shortly after the season, that the NFL was contemplating moving the NFL college draft back. And in fact, it was made official recently. The college draft in 2014, at least, will be the weekend of May 8th, which in effect is 2 weeks later than it's been in the past. And I know a lot of fans wondering, what's that all about? What's going to be the difference? Why do that? And I have to say, quite frankly, I'm not really sure. I think it certainly gives teams a couple more weeks to prepare. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing with the circus that all these pro days have become and a lot of the player visits. It also gives them a little more time to complete their free agency work. Some of the coaches are not happy because it pushes their mini camps back and makes their OTAs more difficult. It will give the NFL more time to market the draft as an event, and maybe they'll build some other revenue opportunities around it. But at the end of the day, something that a lot of people looked at and focused on and said, why mess with it? What are you doing? Is it going to be good or bad? I'm not sure it's going to make much of an impact. It's going to be 2 weeks later. By the time we get there, probably won't feel much different than it always has. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. As always, we give our thanks to Randy Meyer, who does a great job producing and engineering for us. Our home studio and syndicator is Syndication Networks. Most of all, though, we want to thank all of you. We truly appreciate you listening. We hope you'll join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.